Coach L, good evening. How are you?
Hi, Joe.
How's it going, good. Coach?
Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
We just finished practice, and you said, you know, we had some time off this week, but, you know, we're working hard getting ready for Carolina this coming Saturday.
No question about that. You're coming off a good win against Wake Forest. How important was that win for the morale of the team, and a nice win for you, the first win in the ACC?
Well, I've told you this before, and I think everybody can understand it. From a coaching standpoint, we obviously want to win every game. But if you only look at the score, and that determines whether or not you played well, you really have a problem. You have to look at within the game. We played very well in most aspects of the game against NC State. We had one area of our game that was surely lacking, and that was defensive rebounding. We played at Louisville and lost another tough game, and again, the rebounding. Well, some of that is just a fact of life. We're not a great rebounding team. We've lost. Now, we don't have our big guys. We only have Buka, and that is it. DeJuan Hernandez should be in uniform. Dan Gack, if he wasn't hurt, would be playing a lot. And Rodney Miller, if he wasn't redshirting. And, you know, without those three guys, our size is not there. And so there's an area of our game we keep working on to try to improve. But it's really tough on the guys who are out there.
Yeah. I should
have. And I was going to say, we went to Florida State. They got the winning basket on an offensive rebound. And we all saw what Florida State did against Duke this weekend. They gave up a rebound that led to an out-of-bounds play, which led to a three-pointer, which led to their loss. So it comes down to execution of a lot of little things. Against Florida State, we were only 4 for 18 from three. But as you said, we had a nice win over Wake Forest because we made 11 threes out of 25, 44%. If we had done that in the three previous games, we would have won them all.
I should interject, and I don't think you can comment on this at this point. There'll be another hearing for DeJuan tomorrow. So for now, it's status quo, and we'll see what happens tomorrow. But you've had to work without him, and to be honest with you, I guess I would just say this for DeJuan, just my observation, because I have seen him, he has practiced with you and those types of things. It's had to be awfully difficult on him, but his attitude has been really, from my perspective, just looking at him, very cheerful and really good attitude. And I know that's one of the things that you always look for from your players is attitude.
Well, DeJuan is just an outstanding young man. I feel so sad for him to have to go through this. Our philosophy, Joe, is based on three words: attitude, commitment, and class. Number one, do you have a positive attitude towards life? And there's no question, DeJuan has been so positive through this. It has to be so discouraging. You know, first, the indication is, hey, we'll know in a week. This is back in November, 3 months ago. We'll know in a week. And then we'll know after the first couple of games. And then we'll know after the sixth game. We'll know after the ninth game. We'll know after the 12th game. It's just been, you know, 1 week after another of disappointment. But our philosophy is based on having a positive attitude, making a total commitment, Joe, and that is to our program. And there's DeJuan at every practice, busting his tail, coming to every game, cheering for his teammates. And, you know, he is a role model. He sends the right message to his teammates, to the community, to any young player. You know, don't let the bad times and adversity get you down. We all have challenges, and he's risen to the occasion. And then the last is class. Attitude, commitment, and class. And class is about behavior. Behave in a first-class manner. And there's no better example than the way DeJuan has handled all this.
I find, and of course, I'm around your guys during the basketball season, all your players that have come through your program, whether they're here now or have come through the program. I don't know, maybe it's a compliment here, but every guy's been just a sheer delight to deal with. And I'm sure that's something that, as you look at your program through the years, that you're very proud of.
Well, if you look at all the individuals, and let's talk about some of the transfers that we have that have come in, guys like Angel Rodriguez and Sheldon McClellan. You know, they came from other programs, and, you know, there's always going to be a comparison, you know, the way we do things to the way some other program did things. And it's not to be critical of other programs, but Angel and Sheldon just rave about the way they've been treated here at the University of Miami. In fact, Joe, I don't know if you know this, but we're trying to add Angel Rodriguez to our staff right now. Angel is dealing with an injury, a shoulder injury that required surgery. And so he's back in town, going to rehab that shoulder so he can get back playing. But in the meantime, we've offered him an opportunity to apply for a position on our staff, and we're hoping at some point, you know, he'll be joining us this year. So Angel loves Miami, loves the University of Miami. Sheldon Mack, who was called Sheldon McClellan, he loves the university, and they've had experiences at other schools and just feels like, you know, the University of Miami has treated them like part of the family, and they are part of our family.
Yeah, I saw Angel the other day before we went to Tallahassee. His arm was in a bit of a sling, but he'd be a nice mentor for some of your players, especially at the guard position.
Yeah, I mean, someone like Chris Likes or Zach Johnson, they need a player like Angel who's been through the ACC battles, who has had his ups and downs, has earned his degree, and now has a future ahead of him. And these guys can use Angel as a role model, and he can mentor them during these next few months.
You're at a place offensively right now where you're trying to reduce some of the possessions, and it's been very interesting to watch the last couple of games where sometimes the foot is on the gas pedal, but sometimes you're getting it to where you want it. If you don't get the shot in the first couple of seconds, then your team is doing a pretty good job of getting a shot in the final, I don't know, 5 to 8 seconds of the shot clock using the ball screens.
Well, Joe, we've always used the analogy that a game is like a professional prize fight. And let's say, for example, a prize fight was each round was 4 minutes. So you play 40 minutes in college basketball. You've got 10 rounds. And you're trying to win as many rounds as you can so you win on points. That's what a prize fighter has to do. You're not going to win every round. But When you look at within each 4 minutes, there are possessions. Some of them are fast break possessions. Some of them are half court possessions. And you've got to be good at recognizing when you should score in transition on a fast break when you have numbers. 2-on-1, 3-on-2, 4-on-3. And then when the other team is back and they have the advantage of having all five guys back, and if you're coming at them 3-on-5, you need to recognize that and slow it down and make it a 5-on-5 half-court game. And that's what our guards are trying to learn. You would think, oh, you know, anybody should be able to recognize that. But when you're playing at a very high speed, sometimes you don't recognize it soon enough. But we had some very unique fast breaks the other day where a guy like Anthony Mack was really out in front handling the ball, and he made some terrific decisions. And by the way, his improvement has been outstanding. Since September, when he was probably the last man on the team, to now being in the starting lineup and doing a great job for us.
Yeah, he's been hitting some shots. Do you think in any way, and we got a long way to go. But that Florida State game, there were a lot of impressive things in that game. One, your team handled the environment, which they did at Louisville. But Florida State thought they handled the environment. There was plenty of adversity. They battled back. It came down, really, as you mentioned, to an offensive rebound, but down 5, 8 points, whatever it was, with under 5 minutes to go, did not give up, showed resilience, and had a chance maybe to tie the game late.
Well, we definitely had the opportunity to win that game. The difference is going 4 for 18, you know, really limited our chances. But even going 4 for 18, Ibuka Zundu, who's a 70% field goal shooter, who had a point-blank dunk off of a missed shot, and the ball rimmed out.
Yeah,
I mean, it's one of those things that you can't catch a break. There was a play during the game that I lost it. Anthony Mack shot a little turnaround jumper very high in the air. It was going to come down and maybe hit front rim and then bounce around a little bit and go in. And Cabin Jelly went up in the air right in front of the rim and caught the ball. And I clearly thought it was a goaltend, and nothing was called. And that was a huge play in the game. We were down 53-50. Had that been called, it would have been 53-52. Instead, that, I guess, rebound, because he didn't, it was shot, but he went up, grabbed it. They ended up on a fast break and ended up, I'm not sure if it was a two or a three, but it created a much different situation towards the end of the game.
Yeah, we had we flew back after that game, had a late arrival. I thought they really competed at a high level. I know the guys were dejected after that loss because they did put a lot into it. And I don't think there's been any question so far this year about the effort of your team. The Magnificent Seven, I think they've given you a really good effort.
Oh, the effort has been there. And we've had to adjust defensively. We're still playing our normal man-to-man. We've done a pretty good job with that. But we're alternating with the zone primarily to keep our guys out of foul trouble. And the zone is one of the reasons we're probably giving up some rebounds. But we've got to figure out what the compromise is. How important is it to keep Ibuka Zundu on the court? Because when he's in foul trouble and on the bench, we just lack total rebounding. And we're using the zone sporadically throughout the game, and it was very helpful, very effective in our Wake Forest win.
Yeah, well, Childress, who has been in double figures in every game this year and just barely got into double figures on Saturday, you held him to 2 for 12 shooting, so I thought that was very important.
It was. He was 0 for 6 in the first half. He scored some free throws. We fouled him on a couple of shots, but he didn't get a field goal till very, very late. And, you know, got to give credit to Chris Likes and Zach Johnson. Not only did they do a great job offensively, but they did a great job defensively on Brandon Childress, who was averaging about 17, 18 points a game.
I also know at halftime, that perhaps you wanted to get to the rim a little bit more in the second half, and your team did execute that. You went right to the rim in the first 4 minutes of the second half, which I thought also was important to the victory.
Well, some of the positives that you can take from these first four games, Joe, is we've made more free throws than any team in the ACC, and we need to continue to do that. We need to continue to attack Chris Likes, Zach Johnson, Buka Zundu, Anthony Lawrence are really good at getting fouled, and we need to continue to do that. On the other hand, someone like DJ Vasilovich, who's a tremendous free throw shooter, it's hard for him to get fouled because he spends most of his time shooting threes. And I would say the same thing with Anthony Mack and even someone like Sam Wardenburg. They don't shoot a lot of shots right near the basket where they could draw fouls and get to the foul line.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about what's coming up in North Carolina. Also, we'll dive into a little bit of the personnel. Chris Likes having a heck of a season, as is Ibuka Zundu. We'll talk about their improvement. And Carolina's on Saturday, 12 o'clock at the Watsco Center. Our broadcast will begin at 11:30 a.m. Coming up for Miami will be Murderers Row, North Carolina on Saturday. Then a week from Thursday at Syracuse, then January 27th on Sunday back home against Florida State. That's the next three games for the University of Miami. We'll come back with Hurricanes head coach Jim Larrañaga right after this.
Radio.com. Radio.com. Hurricane Hotline on AM 560 and 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com. Now, back to Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Canes, Joe Zagacki.
With University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. Let's talk about some of these players, Coach, that are doing pretty well for you. Chris Likes is tied for the lead in the ACC, an ACC scoring at 22 points a game with two guys from Duke. One of those is Zion Williamson, who is a monster. And here is Chris Likes, all 5'7" of him, top the ACC scoring. What a story.
It really is. Chris has gotten himself off to a great start in league play. He's very, very hard to guard. He can shoot the three. He's dynamic going to the basket and in the open court. And, you know, he's making his free throws right now at a very high rate. He went 14 for 14 against Wake Forest. So that says a number of things. One, we were ahead and they were forced into fouling. Two, he handled the ball very well and got to the basket very aggressively to get fouled. And three, he made the free throws. So we made 12 in a row to end the game. What's striking about that, Joe, is I think that's how we lost to NC State. We only went 16 for 29 against NC State, but we probably would have won that game.
Yeah, it's amazing, the little things. I think Chris has hit 20 free throws in a row now. You mentioned the ones against Wake Forest. When it comes to free throw shooting, you work on this all the time, during practice, after practice, on the road, at home. What are some of the things you tell the players when it comes to free throw shooting?
Well, the most important thing is for them to have a routine. You don't want them reacting to the score or to the crowd or the TV audience or anything where they distract themselves. You don't want them reacting to a miss or something that was happening where, you know, they got fouled and going to the foul line and they're still mad that they missed the shot that they got fouled on. You got to go get into your routine. You got to stay focused and you got to be a good free throw shooter. There are a lot of NBA players that are not good free throw shooters. And fortunately, Chris is going to have the ball in his hands, and he's an outstanding free throw shooter.
Ibuka Uzundu, he has shown dramatic improvement. Six double-doubles this year for you. I think he's a heck of a story as well.
And Ibuka is one of those guys that's always had the capability, but he has spent most of his time having to be a backup because of his foul problems. He's done a better job. He still has some foul issues, but he's done a much better job this year of being available so we can keep playing him. And we're going to need him. Without Dewan, without Rodney Miller, without Dane Geck, we're just very shorthanded there, and we got to keep Ibuka on the court and out of foul trouble. And he needs his teammates to chip in on that. Oh, they can help him by getting in there and taking away some of the space by the big guys that we face.
You have spent, in his time here, a lot of time grooming him, and you've always told him he could be a really good scorer for you. He's almost averaging a double-double, and I think some of it is the confidence that you've shown in him now is being rewarded, and he feels that.
Well, I'm sure his confidence is sky high. And it should be the way he's playing. Buka came in as a freshman. He only weighed 205 pounds, and he really needed to get in the weight room and get stronger. I think he only bench pressed like 150 pounds as a freshman. But now he benches over 300. His weight has gone from 205 to 230. He's very strong. He's got a great little low post game, and we've been able to take advantage of that. We'd like to get him the ball a little bit more, but now that our opponents are scouting us so closely coming into league play, we know some of them are just going to try to keep him from getting the ball, deny him in the low post, front him in the low post, double team him in the low post.
Zach Johnson, I know he was really looking forward to league play. How would you evaluate his play against ACC competition?
Well, I think there's definitely an adjustment. Zach played in the mid-major or low-major leagues at Florida Gulf Coast. And, in fact, he did not win a game at Florida Gulf Coast against a high-major team, an ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12. You play 3 years, you don't beat those teams. Now you come into our league, the ACC, and you're playing against the toughest January schedule of any team in the country. Our January schedule with our road games and the opponents that we're facing is the toughest challenge, not only for Zach, but for everybody on our team. Just think about it. We played NC State. Let me mention something. Right now, the NCAA selection committee evaluates you by your performance against the teams in four different quadrants. Quadrant one is the most difficult. And that's the top 75 teams in the country. And we played NC State. They were quadrant one. We played Louisville, quadrant one. We played
Florida State.
Quadrant one. Wake Forest, quadrant two. North Carolina, quadrant one. Syracuse, quadrant one. Florida State again. Quadrant one, Virginia Tech, quadrant one, Virginia, quadrant one, Notre Dame, quadrant two. And those are just our games in January. So we've got a very, very difficult January schedule.
Yeah, after I got Carolina coming in here on Saturday, which we'll talk about, then on the road to Syracuse, then back home with Florida State, and then Virginia Tech rolling in here. You and I talk, and we have a lot of different discussions before games. I always enjoy them. Sometimes we go down the road of coaching. I wanted to ask you this. What do you think it is about coaching that perhaps maybe fans don't understand about the job of being a coach?
Well, I'll share a conversation I had with two of my players. Because, you know, players don't really understand what coaching is all about. I would say they're similar to fans, but there is some lack of information about what coaching is. What I shared with a couple of our players today was coaching is about preparation. It's about being organized and disciplined. It's about researching the strengths and weaknesses of your own team, your own players, and then the strengths and weaknesses of the opponent. So the amount of time that goes into preparation for even one opponent, I think fans would find fascinating. If you would just join my staff, like I asked Pooh Williamson, who is our scout team coordinator, how many games did he watch on Wake Forest before our staff meeting? And he said seven. He had watched them play seven different opponents, wrote down all of his notes. My other assistants the same way, but breaking it down differently. Coach Caputo, in watching Wake Forest, he was concentrating on their offense so he could put together a good defensive game plan for me. And Coach Fisher, was doing the same thing, watching Wake Forest defense so we could attack it with our offense properly. And I think a lot of fans kind of know that football does that. They have an entire week to prepare for an opponent. We have sometimes one day. And so the preparation is, I would say, really intense, because when we finish a game, like when we played at Louisville on Sunday night, we got in at 3 o'clock in the morning. When we were on the plane, my three coaches were breaking down tapes on Florida State. Louisville had just ended. It's midnight. Those guys are working until 3 o'clock in the morning, figuring out how we beat Florida State. And then all day on Monday and Tuesday, we put the game plan together. It takes hours and hours. We're watching edited tapes of not only Florida State from this year, but we're going back to previous years as to what worked against them and what we think is a consistent way of playing against Florida State. And we're in the process of doing that right now with North Carolina for this coming Saturday. Our practice today, we introduced two of Carolina's best offensive plays and how we wanted to defend it. So a lot of preparation, Joe. I think fans, even our players, are surprised by how much goes into it.
And with all that goes into the preparation, there comes a point in the game where sometimes someone might say, well, why didn't you do this and why didn't you do that? You can't control where the ball goes a lot of times.
Well, that's the thing about developing the right habits. We use the 7 habits of highly effective people to kind of educate our players about how important it is for them to develop the right habits so they can play consistently well. You know, let's look at just the last few games. We played NC State. Their defense was a press. So we had to really work on our press attack. And then you play a team like Louisville, who is man-to-man, but they're huge, so they pack it in around the paint. That's the opposite of what NC State did. And then you play a team like Syracuse that zones. You got to have your preparation for a zone team. And then you play a team like North Carolina that are constantly changing defenses. So every game's a new challenge. Your preparation really is a challenge for your players to understand what the game plan is going to be and how to execute it.
Here's one thing they might not know. While you challenge your players hard and have them very well prepared, you also always want to make it or make the season, and the season can be a grind, but you want to make it fun.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that will indicate to you whether players really like being a part of the program is when practice ends. Do they stay around and still want to shoot and play? Or before practice, do they get in early? Because I can tell you, when kids are unhappy, they don't even want to be in the gym. They don't want to go to practice. If the coaches have made it miserable, then it's no fun for them. But we've always emphasized having fun and enjoying playing with your teammates.
All right, we're going to take a break here. One more segment to go. North Carolina is on deck. That game will be Saturday afternoon at the Watsco Center. 12 o'clock tip-off will be on the air at 11:30. More with Coach L right after this.
Radio.com. It's Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2. WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com. Now, here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
All right, talking basketball here tonight with University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. And Coach L, before we dive into North Carolina, we're in the football recruiting season, and the hot slogan right now is transfer portal. And and so transfers are now becoming a big part of college football, but transfers have been a big part of college basketball for about, what, the last 8 to 10 years?
Yeah, we only had about 800 kids transfer last year, Joe, just a few. Well, what's happened in basketball starts at a much earlier age. Kids are changing schools regularly in elementary school and high school. They'll transfer from one high school to another, then to a third. They're looking for the perfect situation where they're the star of the team and they'll be recruited by all the great college basketball programs in the country. So if you're a sub, you just change high schools and hoping that you'll be the starter and the leading scorer so people will recruit you. And then during the summertime, you join an AAU program. If you don't play enough for them, you transfer AAU programs. There's plenty of them out there. So they get to college if things don't work out right away, or you're just looking for a different environment. They'll play in a different style. You transfer and try a new place.
You have been recruiting for 45 years, I suppose. Heck, the other night we had Brian Oliver in the office who was doing the game on television. When he walked out, you said, "Hey, I recruited that guy." How has it changed? And you've recruited the best, from Ralph Sampson to the guys on the roster now. How do you think recruiting has changed through the years?
Well, Brian Oliver was an outstanding player at Georgia Tech University. He played in the ACC. He played overseas. He's a very good high school and college basketball player and a good enough professional to make a living at it for a while. But when we recruited Brian, there was no internet. There was no cell phones. I used to write a handwritten note to everybody that I was recruiting every single day on a postcard back when postcards were legal. Eventually, they changed it where you couldn't write on postcards. But recruiting has changed dramatically with social media, with television exposure. Back in the early 80s, when I was at Virginia, the top programs in the country had shoe deals. But not everybody had a shoe deal, not coaches or even schools. And that changed. Now, just about every school in the country has some kind of shoe deal. Well, the shoe companies have also now reached out to high school programs. So there are high schools and AAU programs that have huge shoe deals. And that impacts the recruiting process because the AAU coach is basically making money from a shoe company. If he has a really good player, he wants to encourage him to go to the company that he represents. So if I work, let's say, for example, if I work for Nike as an AAU coach and they're paying me a very generous salary and I have a really good player, I'm going to encourage that kid to go to a Nike school so that the Nike people who make the decision of whether or not they want to retain me or even give me a raise, they're pretty happy with me. So recruiting has changed dramatically over the last 30 years.
I guess Ralph Sampson and Michael Jordan would be one and done today, right?
Well, Ralph Sampson had a chance to be one and done. Back then, you could leave after your freshman year, but Ralph chose to stay. He could have been two and done. He chose to stay. Three and done. He chose to stay. Because education was important to him, he wanted to earn his degree from the University of Virginia. He did that in 4 years and then advanced himself to the NBA, where he was an NBA Rookie of the Year and an NBA All-Star in his rookie year.
Carolina's coming in on Saturday. Always a big event when Carolina's here. You've always played them great. Last year, of course, Jaquan Newton hit the half-court shot and then saw him at the ACC tournament. North Carolina, they want to get into a track meet. They always play the same. Their personnel changes, but every time Roy Williams rolls his team out there, they philosophically, they're pretty much the same.
Well, you know, that's one of the stories I tell our players every time we play Carolina. The last game I played in college was against the University of North Carolina in Madison Square Garden in the NIT, 1971. Their system hasn't changed. The game plan that Dave Gavitt put together for our Providence College team is very similar to the game plan my staff and I put together when we played Carolina. And that was 48 years ago. Their offense is the same. Their defense is the same. It's just the personnel changes. And the coach changed. Dean Smith coached at Carolina forever. When he was finished, he was the winningest college basketball coach of all time. Roy Williams is now the coach. He was an assistant for Dean Smith for a very long time. He runs the same offense and same defenses. So, you know, the game preparation is very similar from game to game and year to year.
And so in this game on Saturday, it'll be important for your team, I would imagine, get back on defense. We'll be hearing a lot about get back, get back, get back.
Well, the first thing you have to do against North Carolina is you got to prevent the five-second layup. North Carolina and Michigan State are the best teams in the country at scoring in the first 5 seconds of a possession. They'll rebound an outlet and run, or even if you put the ball in the basket, their big guys are trained to inbound quickly, push it up the floor, and try to score before the other team's defense is set. And you might say, well, doesn't everybody do that? Yeah, to a certain extent. But those two programs, especially Carolina, are the best at it, probably because they have the best players. If you look at the history of North Carolina with Michael Jordan and James Worthy and Brad Daugherty and Bob McAdoo, and the list goes on and on, Phil Ford, Mitch Kupchak, Tommy Lagarde, Walter Davis, just recently with Joel Berry and Luke May and Bryce Johnson, and you know everybody they have is like a McDonald's All-American. And now they even took a transfer in Cam Johnson, who Cameron Johnson played at Pittsburgh, transferred to Carolina, and you know he fits into their system beautifully because he's a fantastic three-point shooter.
Yeah. Duke is getting ready to tip off here against Syracuse. Zion Williamson is back in the lineup. What do you think about this game coming up, Duke and Syracuse?
You know, Syracuse lost to Georgia Tech at home.
Yeah.
That was a surprise to me. But I will tell you this. There are certain teams in the league that as much as you prepare for them, your team can't do it the way they do it. Like, Syracuse is a very difficult team to prepare for, primarily because their guards are like 6'6 and 6'7". So your guards, my guards, are 5'7 and 6'1". We can't simulate the Syracuse zone. So I think it's a challenge for Duke to go against the zone. When you play Virginia, you can't really play the man-to-man defense like they do because they're so good at making you play defense. They kind of slow the game down and keep you on defense for 30 seconds. Then they go back and they pack it in so you can't get inside their defense very easily. So every game is different. I would say, you know, Duke certainly has the talent to play great and win anywhere they play against any college basketball team. But it wouldn't shock me tonight if Syracuse won. I think they're the kind of team that Duke hasn't faced yet. And Duke is young. They got a lot of freshmen. And no matter how good they are, that Syracuse zone is different. And they're going to have to make adjustments repeatedly throughout the contest.
All right, Saturday, North Carolina comes to the Watsco Center. Then next week we'll go on the road to Syracuse. So you'll have time to prepare for that one. And then Florida State, you got Murderers Row coming up, actually. North Carolina, Syracuse, Florida State, and Virginia Tech is playing very well this year. But Carolina is up first, and I think the big crowd will be there on Saturday. Should be very exciting. And as I mentioned, you've always played Carolina very well.
Yeah, we won last year at the buzzer. If we could do that again, I'd be very happy. The year they won the national championship, we were one of the few teams to beat them here in Coral Gables, but it's really key, Joe, and I'm pretty sure it'll be true. We need a great crowd. We need our students out there. We need our local community, Miami Hurricane fans, to come out and cheer us on and create that electric atmosphere that we love.
Yeah, no question about that. All right, Coach, thank you very much. I'll see you during the week and then Saturday before the game against Carolina.
All right, Joe, thank you.
All right, that's University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga joining us. When we come back, we'll hear from Dan Enos, who is the Hurricanes' new offensive coordinator. He was on earlier today with Joe Rose, so some of you might be on the way home, didn't hear it this morning. And Coach Enos answered a lot of questions in regard to transfers and what kind of offense he's going to run and all of those important elements. So we'll hear from Dan Enos when we come back as the Hurricane Hotline continues.
Radio.com.